Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show, we have a special announcement, personal announcement, actually. I'm leaving Fox Los Angeles to work for our national content team at the company, and which I'm very excited about. But that also means that Olympic and Bundy is getting a new host. Drumroll. The amazing Christine Devine. She's been a staple here at Fox Los Angeles for 25 years. She's an amazing storyteller and really involved in the communities within Southern California, and undoubtedly will take this podcast to the next level and the level above that one. So thank you very much for listening thus far, and I hope you enjoy. What was your morning like today?
Well, I was here late writing, so I was here till 1:30 in the morning writing my story. And then just made my breakfast, cooked breakfast for the husband, made my way into work. I have a big story airing tonight, so.
What's your story?
I have the producers of Nipsey Hussle's Victory Lap album.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to have the interview.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Where are they?
They're a small studio in North Hollywood. I mentor some artists.
Yeah, I've seen that a little bit on your Instagram.
Right. So one of our producers, when Nipsey was killed, I messaged our producer and said, Nipsey. And because we had done a backpack giveaway with Nipsey in 2014 through this producer, Matthias Nardi. Yeah, so I messaged Matthias and just wrote Nipsey, and he wrote, I know his producers, and he said they were crying.
Yeah.
And so I thought about a few days later, well, why don't we try to give them some time to tell their story and talk about the journey? It was fascinating because they were with him on the mixtape days.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they've seen that whole evolution.
Yep. It took like 5 to 6 years for Victory Lap, that project. Yeah. Because they were with him since 2013.
What years were like his mixtape days when he was like selling them out of the trunk of his car?
Well, he's been in the game for a long time. He's been doing this kind of forever. And they were telling me how they couldn't get him on the radio. Nobody wanted to play him. And so he would do these mixtapes, but he really hit by selling mixtapes for $100. Yeah. And Jay-Z bought a bunch of them.
So wait, why $100?
He said they were worth it.
Wow.
He said they were worth it. Mm-hmm. And so they really felt like, wow, we're getting some attention here. So he's been in the game for a while. And then Victory Lap, though, is the one that put him over the top with Atlantic Records.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Were there other, do you know if there are other people in his family who were like into making music, or they were rapping, or just like artistically inclined that he?
Yeah, I've been listening to podcasts and interviews like crazy this whole past week. I've not heard anybody say anything like that. I listened to like a 1 hour thing he did on the radio, with a radio station, and he never mentioned like, you know, my mom or my dad or my brother. So no. Huh.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remembered, I didn't know much about him until Leah Uko's story that aired. I don't think I was here in 2014 when you guys did the backpack drive yet. So my first introduction to him, other than like a couple songs maybe when I was in high school that I remember.
Really?
Yeah. There was definitely a couple songs where his name was in the song. Like he would say, like he just said Nipsey Hussle in the beginning of the song. Like I remember that name from a couple songs, but I couldn't even tell you the names of the songs.
He's on a T.I. song. He was part of the Tupac movie that came out a few years ago.
Oh,
L.T. Hutton gave him a break on that. Mm-hmm. So he's been doing his thing. He's been, you know, with YG.
Yeah.
I mean, 2014 he was with YG. So he's been out there for a long time. That's why I think so many people who are trying to do what he does, be in music, respect the struggle, respect the game, respect the fight, respect the you know, never giving up kind of thing.
Yeah. YG's also from the same area,
Compton.
Right?
No, he's Compton.
Oh, Compton. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Wow, so I'm recording now, by the way, and the levels sound good.
Very good.
It's amazing. Once you, that soundboard over there like seems so intimidating, but if you just know, like 8 of the little knobs, you can get going.
All right.
Yeah. So you're going tomorrow to the memorial service, right?
I am, yes. I was among the many people who submitted for tickets like everybody else on AXS.com.
Yeah.
I went on right at 10 a.m., put in my bid, and there was this little like walking figure that kind of was showing you how long you were waiting. Waiting, only to get the answer, no tickets available. I'm like, what? 50 minutes I've been looking at my phone.
Did
here.
You go on there right at 10 a.m.?
Right at 10.
Yeah, that's amazing. So yeah. That means like there must have been tons of people who were on there at like 9:45, you know, like just thousands of people who were just waiting.
I don't know how it worked, but I had to download the app. And so it took me a few minutes to do that. So I really didn't even get on till 10. But I did have people say that they were on earlier who didn't get tickets either.
Gotcha. So you guys are all going to meet. I've been in a ton of like planning meetings, like logistics meetings about how this memorial service will be covered on digital for us and then obviously on the show.
Right.
And so you guys, the doors open at 8. Are you guys going to go in as soon as the doors open or do you know yet?
I am waiting for my instructions. I know we have to go in all together. Our person who has the tickets, you know, got the four. We have somebody who win a winner.
It's amazing. It's like she won the lottery.
Exactly. So the four of us will all go together to get in together. And we'll go from there. So whatever the call time is. But I do know, I've been talking with the rep for a major celebrity who is going and was asked to speak at the service. And they said they're going to 8:30 in the morning.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many, that's the other thing is they haven't, the Staples Center, no one organizing this has put out an official like list maybe of who, you know, we can expect to say something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been really curious about is who's going to be speaking. You know?
Well, think of it like this. Whenever you have a tragedy in your own family and you have to plan a service, one, you're dealing with heartbreak.
Oh, totally.
And shock. And then you have to deal with what are we going to do? Who's going to be invited? We have limited space, relatively speaking, if you're going to open up to fans. I mean, how many tickets go to fans? How many go to immediate family? How many go to business colleagues? How many go to other people you know? I mean, how far back do you go with your guest list? And then, I mean, I can't even imagine the plan. Think of like planning a wedding.
And I can't, I
how,
truly
how you
can't
allocate
imagine.
Who can attend. So that's why I think it's really great that the city's allowing that procession so anybody can be part of this experience if they want to be. You can just go out to the street. It's a 25-mile, you know, stretch of procession that if you want to witness it, be part of it. It kind of reminds me of when the shuttle came to L.A. and they paraded the shuttle through the streets of L.A. I went at midnight just to – I wanted to see it for myself. I just wanted to be there even for an hour myself and just feel the energy of the crowd. I mean, the shuttle was – huge. I had no idea how big the shuttle was.
Didn't they have to plan, like, basically they had to go on a certain route because it was wider than some streets, right?
They had to actually take some trees down
to
allow the shuttle to be transported through the streets. And it was just almost like a spiritual thing to witness and to think that this vehicle went to space and carried man to space. And so people are going to want to be a part of this experience in LA that is just so absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah, it definitely is. In your, as long as you've been covering things in Los Angeles, is this like, in your recollection, has there been anything similar to this in the past of other, you know, musicians who have passed away or just people, you know, who champion for the area?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are always these defining moments in history, and this is one of them. I knew right away it was big because, if you recall, I had done this backpack giveaway in 2014. So I knew of the works of Nipsey Hussle as far back as 2014. I wasn't a huge follower of his music necessarily, but I knew of his investment in the community and that he had a store. So when Leah Uko did her story, it just kind of sealed the deal with his investment in the community. Now everybody was looking at his contribution and how he was living his life and offering jobs to felons and just staying in the community. So when he was shot and we learned that he died, I called to the station, it was a Sunday, and I called in to the producer and said, this is really big. And we were talking about it. I said, no, for the young generation, this is the Tupac of their time, meaning the death was that big for their time. Because remember, in this day and age, they're streaming and they're looking at videos and they're sharing photos. So the reach is so much bigger than decades ago.
Yeah.
So that alone, it touched on a lot of nerves.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned so much about the country where he was from. Mm-hmm. And I was on, how do you say the country?
Eritrea.
Eritrea. There's a pretty decent sized Eritrean American community in Los Angeles.
Great story.
On their website. Yeah, I think the Los Angeles Times and maybe the Washington Post did like stories kind of about that angle. And he, I guess, went to Eritrea and that in some way inspired him to kind of help,
want to give back?
Yeah, in South Los Angeles to kind of like give back once he got back to the United States. Apparently, he things he saw there or learned there or whatever. But this week, I feel like I've learned a lot of different things that I through his life. Like Eritrea, I didn't know anything about Eritrea.
I actually should check that pronunciation to make sure it's not Eritrea.
Yeah,
I really should double check that, especially before tomorrow's coverage. But yeah, you're right. He didn't know much. I guess he hadn't met any of his father's relatives until he went there. And I watched a long interview where he said he was just embraced by them. There's a bread that they make that his father used to make. So he had the foods of his homeland. But to go back there has got to be so eye-opening. And it's funny because I say his story touches many on so many levels. Like, I don't know my father's birthland. Mm. My father's from Brazil. My parents didn't stay together. My father stayed in Brazil. So I don't know him. I don't know any relatives on my father's side. So I feel like I can relate to that experience.
Yeah.
And how it must have been so moving for him to go and see people who look like him, relatives.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Mm. Yeah, definitely. Just seeing someone that looks like you and like is your blood.
Yeah.
That's out there in the world, you know, far away, but.
Right. And to learn about what his birth name means and just to learn about his heritage. Mm. And, you know, he's a son of Africa as well as LA.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how many, I mean, just to go on a tangent, Los Angeles is so big. I'm always amazed how many communities of different nations exist here.
But that's awesome. A great story.
Totally.
We should put a reporter on that to learn more about that. It's interesting.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're going to have pretty much our whole staff is on this story tomorrow.
but that angle of that community, I mean, to have somebody, you know, represent them. So, you know, in such a big way.
Exactly.
It reminds me like
how many people had even, I mean, it's bad to say, but how many people had even heard of that country?
Right. And it reminds me like our own Aroxia Karapetian. You know, being Armenian and how she's so embraced by the Armenian community. Yeah. And I've got to think that his community also looks up to him as to what he's accomplished in this country.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So how does being in the podcast room feel?
Different. It's different. It reminds me a little bit of radio, you know, where you have the headset on, the microphone.
Yeah.
No TV screen. I am glad that I don't have to wear makeup if I don't want to.
Oh, that's the best.
Exactly, right? Yeah. That'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
What was the radio station that you said you sometimes fill in the morning?
I have filled in at 93.5 when they had their morning girl go on maternity leave. I got to fill in for like a week, which was a lot of fun.
Were you talking about kind of like news topics of the day?
Current events. Oh, okay. Pop culture.
Gotcha. So beforehand, do they have like a meeting to say, okay, we're going to talk about X, Y, and Z, and then...
I wouldn't call it a meeting.
Oh, okay.
You kind of come in and say, these are the three topics that we're going to talk about, and you kind of do a little research, and then you know, it's pretty quick. You know, the news hit on a music station is pretty quick, but Romeo was great. The thing is about a station like that, he just bumps music for a living.
Right.
And so for me, it was like being at the nightclub at 7 in the morning.
What music is it? Like what genre?
Back in the day, hits.
Oh, hip-hop fun.
Hits. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're playing Tupac. We're playing Biggie. We're playing.
Oh, that's super fun. No.
Yeah.
How, I don't even, this is how little I know about radio. How do they decide on the playlist? Is it just.
Ooh, that's a good question. I got to think it's whatever their, you know, their genre is.
Yeah.
And there's back in the day, you know, the hip-hop hits. Probably. That's not a question for me.
I wonder if they have... I'm always curious about this because some stations, like, you can almost... Like, I feel like 98.7, mm-hmm. which is, like, alternative. You can almost always guarantee like one Red Hot Chili Pepper song per hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because that's just the station that I happen to like have programmed and listen to every once in a while. But then, like, you know, if you listen to a station every single day and you start to notice, like, oh, they play the song a lot. I'm always wondering, like, did they just pay attention to, like, requested songs, you know?
Yep. That is a different department. Yeah. You'll have to ask them. We'll have them on as a guest, since you asked.
You totally
should.
It's a great
podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A radio DJ would make a great podcast guest because they know how to talk into the mic and talk.
But almost you might want somebody from the business side because they are the ones who can talk about the lineup and how they strategize with
it. Oh, yeah, totally.
Because the big thing is they don't want you flipping that dial.
Yeah, and honestly, I hate to say it, but Spotify is just...
I'm not
podcasts.
A Spotify person.
Oh, you don't have Spotify?
I have it. I don't even use it.
What do you listen to music in the car?
I listen to the radio.
Radio.
But remember, I'm more of a current events person. So for me, I'm kind of flipping current events. And then when I feel like I've gotten my fix, I can take a break and listen to some music.
Talk radio? Or?
Yeah, talking news.
Gotcha.
Because I have to have the headlines. So I want to make sure I know what's going on.
Yeah.
So once I have a fix on that or some of the topics of LA, I want to hear what's going on.
Yeah.
Perspective and opinion. But yeah, I like to bump a good music station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I find that with Spotify, I have an account with Spotify, so it doesn't play ads, so I can just, you know, play whatever song.
Oh,
you know, so I can like skip, I can do I have the full control of my music playlist with Spotify. And then with podcasting, I barely listen to the radio anymore, and then when there is a new song that's playing on, like, you know, Kiss or something, a popular radio station, I don't know it anymore. Like, I don't know these songs anymore because I barely listen to the radio.
I see. Now, you have Spotify on your car?
On my phone, and then I have Bluetooth. So I play it over my phone, and it goes over my car. You know?
Because I actually am embarrassed to say this, but I have old cars, so I don't have the modern technology.
Oh, you don't have Bluetooth?
No.
But how do you... So if you get a phone call in the car, you just...
I have a headset.
Oh.
I'm very, like, behind the times. I'm in desperate need of a new car.
No, Christine, I just got Bluetooth, like, 2 years ago, and I feel like... Once you get Bluetooth, it's like you won The Price is Right.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I was like, wow, this just freed up my whole life.
Well, my to-do list is a mile long, and so are the things I want to buy. So I just haven't gotten around to buying a new car.
When you buy a new car, what do you think you'll get? Like a sedan, an SUV?
Well, friends are trying to get me to go eco.
Oh, okay.
Get an eco car.
Okay.
I mean, I have a Prius, but, you know, I could upgrade
for
sure, or get an electric car like some colleagues.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the husband is begging for a big pickup truck.
What does he have?
He has a Mercedes.
Okay.
An older one. But he really he's an Indiana boy, and he wants a pickup truck.
Oh.
Yeah,
I relate to that Midwestern.
We'll see.
Truck driving self.
I've never had an SUV, so I'm thinking maybe an SUV. Because a hatchback, we need it for his music gear, because he's a musician. So we need a hatchback of some sort to put the music gear in. So I might get my first SUV. We'll see.
I could see you cruising in an SUV.
Yeah,
I like SUVs. I used to, my first car when I was in high school, I bought it for like $2,000. It was a Isuzu Rodeo, SUV. And it was very fun because you're higher up, you know? It's safer.
But here's what I don't like about it. I like a trunk. I carry so much stuff. I'm a stuff person. I always like being able to lock up my car, especially, you know, we valet a lot in LA.
Yeah.
So, and they say, don't leave anything visible in your car. I have so much stuff in my car. I could live in my car.
That's a great point. Because then all your stuff just exposed.
Yeah.
And you have to parallel park a lot here. And having a bigger car, it's harder.
I love my little Prius in and out.
Yeah, you can like...
And also having an older car, if I get a door ding, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I know. That's how I feel now, too. I'm like, if I had a brand new car, maybe I would just, not that I don't drive with caution now, but I have so many dings on my car that I'm not that concerned. you know?
My husband is like, he'll park like, you know, down the lot so he doesn't get a door ding. He looks at my car. Where'd you get that ding?
Oh, exactly. Literally, Cole does the same. My husband will go to the grocery store. Yeah. And he literally parks at the farthest corner possible. Mm-hmm. And there's like 600 open spots.
Right. A good exercise.
Yeah. No, that's true. You can get your steps in. No, that's true. Mm-hmm. So when I was here, I think, was it 2 or 3 years ago when you celebrated your work anniversary here?
Oh, gosh. Yes. That sounds about right. Let me think. Something like that.
Was it 20 or 25 years?
Oh, they celebrated 25.
25.
Yes.
That's right. Because I remember Steve celebrated something on Good Day Late, maybe around the same time, and he was 20, but I remember that you were longer. So 25. So
correct.
How, what is this year then?
This will be 28.
Wow.
I know.
What is
crazy,
that?
Right?
Is that, does it feel like, what does that feel like to you?
You know, I feel grateful that I can still walk in the door, that the pass, the security pass still works.
Yeah.
That, honestly, that they still allow me to do what I like to do, which is be part of information and community. You know, I look at different things that people are doing, like Oprah Winfrey. You'd think she had the greatest job with her talk show, right?
Yeah.
But now she's doing a project with Prince Harry on mental health.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so there are neat things you can do after the big job. So, and Kathy Lee, I was listening to a podcast on Kathy Lee. Somebody said to her, you gave up the greatest job ever. She goes, well, that's not really the greatest job to me. I want to be in movies. I'm an actress and a singer. And now she's producing, directing, something like that. So she's making movies. She's like, I'm actually doing what I've wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, okay. So one day there will be a different chapter, and these people invigorate me to remind me that there will be something really cool next. But today we're walking in the door here at Fox 11.
Yeah. I didn't realize that Kathy Lee was an actress, but I remember I learned that when someone was filling in for her on the morning show, and she was filming a movie overseas somewhere. But yeah,
Israel?
I thought that,
she works a lot in Israel.
I believe it was, I can't remember, but anyhow, yeah, I didn't realize that she was an actress, but I think that's like at each point in your life, like you should totally try and challenge yourself in, right, you know, whatever you're passionate about.
The funny thing is I saw her on a commercial for Carnival Cruises back in the day. And I literally said, who is that? She just was so captivating. Like, there are certain people you just can't take your eyes off. Or I really feel like I should be an agent sometimes, because there are a few people that I didn't know who they were. I'm like, who is that? Stop me in my tracks. And she was one of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
She was just, it was before her.
Just a commercial. Just some girl on a commercial.
And you remember seeing her?
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
I this hasn't happened to me too many times, maybe less than 10.
Yeah.
Where there are certain people that have stopped me in my tracks.
Wow. She's got it. She's got like... Mm-hmm. The thing.
She does.
The it thing. I do love, I remember like my grandparents used to watch her and Regis, and like I've always known that she had a son named Cody. Mm-hmm. And what's her daughter's name?
That I don't know.
Oh, I forget. She used to talk about her kids so much on the show that like their whole lives they've been just, you know, like their mom has been talking about them on the show, that it's funny to see them grown up now, you know?
She did. Yeah. She mentioned that her kids are grown, and she actually, this podcast was amazing. It was with Maria Shriver. I'm a big podcast person. She talked about also the loneliness of, you know, having lost a spouse and having the kids grown. And I thought it was such a candid conversation. And I really respected how candid she was, because that speaks to a lot of people. And Maria Shriver, too, you know, she's not with Arnold. So they talked about, you know, how you can feel lonely at really any age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, God, I can't think of her daughter's name. But, yeah, her husband passed away a couple years ago, right?
Yes. And she talked about hoping to find a love like that again. And she's a Christian woman. She's a woman of faith. And she talked about, you know, asking God to give her another shot at love.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
I thought it was very candid.
Did you grow up in Arizona?
I did.
So when did you move to L.A.?
1990.
For a news job?
Yes, for the job. I was a morning anchor, news, not necessarily like a Good Day Late, morning hard news, in Tucson. And I was sitting next to a colleague. He said, you ought to give your tape to my new agent. And I said, well, I don't need an agent, because I just want to go to Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
I want to be the hometown girl in Arizona. So I already know where I'm going. I know the plan. And he's like, just send it. So I sent it, and the agent, thank you, Ken Lindner, started shopping me around to different locations. So I interviewed one weekend here in L.A. and one in Sacramento, and they both offered me jobs as a weekend anchor. And I'm like, but I want to stay in Phoenix. And Phoenix kept saying I was too young and too green and not ready.
Wow.
So I'm like, well, all right, I guess God, your way, not my way. And I thought LA is closer to home, so I'll do LA.
Gotcha.
Came here, was completely scared, in over my head. They said, we'll train you. We'll train you for like a month. That didn't happen. They just kind of
train you for a month?
Yeah. They just kind of threw me to the wolves.
Wow.
Because I said I wasn't ready. I was like 25 years old, 24 years old.
Gotcha.
So I thought, oh, I'm not ready for this. And I thought I made a deal that worked. And
yeah.
I got here and I think the people that hired me were even gone by the time I got here. They actually held the job for me for 6 months too.
Wow, really?
Because I said, I need to finish out my morning show contract obligation because they created a show and offered me the show if I would stay for a guaranteed 2 years.
So gotcha.
I honored my 2-year contract in Tucson.
Uh-huh.
And Fox held the job for me.
For 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So like I said, God,
you
your way, not
really
my way.
You must have really wowed them.
Must have been. Must have been. I have no idea.
Wow. So did you like Los Angeles when you moved here?
I was overwhelmed. One, I had the college boyfriend back home. So when with someone like for 4 years and suddenly you're away from them. Well, I lived in Texas for a short minute with my career, but that was kind of hard because you're flying back and forth all the time.
Yeah, doing like the long distance thing.
The traffic, wasn't used to that.
So it was bad in 1990.
Just that, you know, it's so spread out.
Right,
so
yeah.
So if you're driving to a store, you might be driving 2 hours to a store.
Yeah.
So spread out. It was overwhelming. It really was. Yeah.
And then you started as a weekend anchor here then?
I was weekend anchor. I think I always tell a story that I think I cried every week for a year.
Really? Why'd you cry?
Like I said, well, I was away from the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Away from my state. Mm. Overwhelming city. Big issues. You know, I had not seen so much crime. And that was really tugging at my heart. You know, I was from Tucson, Arizona.
Right.
You don't see a lot of crises in Tucson, Arizona. And we actually covered a lot of in-depth issues in Tucson. And here there was just so much. There was so much news. And we had fires. We had earthquakes. We had, you know, the Rodney King story. We had the riots. I mean, all that was almost like back to back to back to back.
Yeah. So you were anchoring on the weekends, and then were you taking on stories during?
Which to me is the best job because you get your anchoring skill set built up, and then you report 3 days a week, solid reporting. You're not like anchoring a morning show, then you go out for a few hours. No, you're a solid reporter. You're out there for the live shots. You're out there for the full coverage. You're a full-time reporter.
Yeah.
So I love that job. Weekend anchor is a great job.
When you started in Los Angeles, and obviously you're doing the anchoring thing and then going to report on stories, did you develop specific kinds of stories that you like to tell?
Well, when you're general assignment, you kind of are covering the news of the day. But I did like to tell the kind of stories I like to tell now, which are the good in the community, the positive in the community, the people doing good. And actually why I started going out in the community is because if I'm anchoring and I don't know where Whittier is, that's not good for me. If I'm anchoring and I don't know where Irvine is or Montebello or Watts, then I'm not as an effective anchor. I'm just a reader.
Right.
So I started accepting all these invitations to MC so that it would take me to those locations. If you're doing, let's say, Century City Chamber of Commerce, you're being introduced to powerful people, movers and shakers of Century City. If you're going to Watts, you're meeting the sweet Alice Harris, and you're working directly with them. If I have an event coming up in Orange County where I'm meeting the women of South Coast, so women who are making a difference in Orange County.
Yeah. You're honestly always doing things.
Well,
like events.
Keep in mind, I don't have children, so I have the free time. Here's what I say. We're all doing stuff.
Yeah.
It's just we're doing different things.
It's true.
So, you know, like my colleague Dan Cohen has 3 children. So he's busy being a little league coach to his son.
Yeah.
And going to church with the family and being a husband and barbecuing for the kids. So we're all busy. We're
just doing
different things.
That's true. Mm-hmm. You have a nice way to say it.
it really is true. And that's why I people say you do so much. I'm like, well, you do too.
Yeah.
We all do so much, whether it's going to the gym to physically take care of our health or spending time with a husband or a boyfriend or friends,
yeah,
nurturing friendships. I mean, you know, all the events I do, I'm very neglectful of friendships. Because Saturday night when someone's going to the movies with four friends and dinner, I'm emceeing an event in another part of town with new people.
Right.
So there's a pro and con to it. I never say, it's better. It's doing so much more.
Yeah.
It's just different. It's choices.
Yeah. So you must get something out of it, though, personally, like when you go to do an event like that, like just meeting people and must make you get energized in some way, or?
Well, on the job, the healing part of it is, as you know, in news, we cover so much heartbreak, tragedy, pain, suffering, loss. And I really was having a hard time with that because I hadn't witnessed so much of that. And so these community events are proof to me that there are people fighting for their communities, fighting for their neighborhoods, fighting for good, working on behalf of children, empowering people who maybe would never make the news for whatever reason. It's proof to me that there's so much good in Los Angeles, more good than the negative that we sometimes have to cover. And every night I say a prayer before I anchor the news. You see me on set doing my little prayer. That we do justice to those that we cover. Aww. And like my father died in an accident. And it made the news. And so I know what it's like to see your loved one's story summed up in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, well, that's it. I guess that's it. But even then, it showed that it mattered, that it was important to the community. It was a bizarre scuba diving accident in a lake. That doesn't happen every day in a small town. So I feel like when we tell a story, even though it's a crime story, it's a short story, perhaps we're giving one family some justice that their loved one mattered, that we can maybe help catch the suspect or let people know that there's an effort to catch a suspect or that somebody's being brought to justice.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes, like, in at least our job and working in news, mm-hmm. Just when you're saying this, it's like making me tear up because you get so used to like the day in and day out of writing stories.
Yeah.
For you, probably reading stories and just the continuous incoming of sad, tragic things happening that you, I don't know, even you saying that's like, ugh, you think about all the people who are involved in each of those things.
Yes. Well, I had a mentor tell me, you know, life is hard. And I was like, really? Yeah, you're right. Life is hard. And a lot of people are dealt chapters that are very painful. I feel like we all get them in some fashion. You know, whether it's my father who, you know, died in a lake while scuba diving. Actually, it was a community service project to clean up debris at the bottom of the lake.
In Arizona?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we all have our chapter of loss and heartbreak. And, you know, people go through it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell different stories. But we all go through it.
How long ago did that accident happen?
That was a good 20 years ago.
20?
But, you know, it went with all the heartbreak of then there was a lawsuit for negligence. Then we had to go through the courts and the trials and the attorneys. And then my mom, you know, I watched how she processed grief. And I watched how, you know, she was so devastated. It kind of hit her like 6 months in and she was devastated. And then the picture of her, you know, coming home to dinner after work by herself and building a life by herself now. But some neat things came out of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she grew into a new chapter of herself. She met girlfriends, and she was the cheerleader in the neighborhood to have all the little parties, and she would take a friend to the hospital for their appointment. She traveled to Europe. She'd go on retreats in Mexico. She went to Egypt. So neat things came out of...
She went to Egypt?
Yeah. Back when you would go to Egypt.
Yeah.
Now, you know, when they had the civil unrest, then people didn't go.
Yeah.
But yeah, she went on a big, you know, tour group.
Mm-hmm. Aww. That's sweet.
So she built something out of after the tragedy. And my hope is that others do the same.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
Oh, you don't know my sibling story?
No.
It's a long story. I will sum up like this. So my mother was a single mother when she had me. So when she married, they had a child. That's my sister.
Okay.
Wouldn't recognize her because she's blonde. I'm brunette. She's blonde. And then they fostered 5 kids from Vietnam, refugee children, and they adopted a Latin boy. So we were literally United Nations in our photo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of them speak? Does your brother speak?
Vietnamese?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. They came over as refugees escaping on boats at different ages.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Where do they all live?
One is a doctor in the Navy. And so is he on a ship now? I'm not sure.
Wow, is he based in San Diego?
He is and was. He was training with NASA for a minute, so.
My gosh.
Yeah, he's got a cool little story. Yeah, so I think he's being transferred back to San Diego. Another one was also in the Navy for a short time, and he was talking about being in the Vietnam area on a U.S. ship and looking down and seeing these little boats and thinking, oh, we escaped on a boat just like that. My gosh, how do we survive? So that was a neat story. Then another one would do business back and forth in Vietnam, so he'd go back a lot and married a girl from there. And then there's one sister, and she... one of them is building Buddhist temples.
Wow, in Vietnam?
No, there's a big Buddhist temple up in Northern California.
Wow.
He's helping to build it. Yeah, I mean, it's already built, but he's helping to build onto it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Is he Buddhist?
Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, they would never kill a bug, let's say, because they believe all life is sacred. So, like, if there was a bug in the house when we were kids...
Oh, they would scoop it up and absolutely. Carry it outside. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And they eat vegetarian, so we always had, you know, really healthy ideas at the house. And very spiritual.
How old were they when they... flood?
Different ages, give or take 6, 8, 10, 12.
So do they have a lot of memories at that time?
Because they escaped at different times.
Oh, okay.
They were kind of smuggled out one by one.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Do they have a lot of memories from that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess if you're 10.
Yeah. Well, then they have a father still. He was in the South Vietnamese military. He kept getting caught by the communists and putting into the education camps. So, in fact, he and the daughter, they were the last to try to go, and they got caught.
What happened?
He had to go to a camp, and a re-education camp is what they called it. And she finally smuggled her out on her own.
Wow.
So she was the last to come. And so she's a mom now.
Oh.
But their father eventually was able to come to this country. And the neat thing is, my brother... I get his rank wrong, and he always scolds me. So let me
The one who's a doctor?
Commander, something like that. He's way up. He's way up in the military.
The one who
the
is
doctor.
A doctor? That,
yes.
What did he do for NASA? That's cool.
So he's in some kind of training.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, but he's a doctor on a ship now. I think he went back to that. When he got promoted to the rank, I should look it up because I didn't get it right once. He's like, well, thanks for that promotion.
Yeah.
But he's pretty high up. And his father got to come with some of his friends Vietnam. And so what a chapter to have been in the South Vietnamese military, have gone through these communist camps, have cared so much about your children that you put them on boats to escape, and then to see your son serving in the U.S. military.
Yeah, that's really special. Mm-hmm. And just the thought of putting your children on a boat is like... Oh, man, that's tough. Mm-hmm. I mean, but you obviously would do it.
Yeah, one brother told me that what they would do is the planks of these little rickety boats, they would put the people underneath, like where the engine room is, and kind of board it up, and you had to be quiet in case the boat got, you know, patrol.
Surge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for days at sea that they'd be, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what the path was, too.
Some went to Malaysia. Because they're Catholic Charities took in a lot of the kids in these camps and helped get them homes.
Wow. So then once they got to the United States.
Well, I know some were at these camps for like maybe a year or two. And then my family took two brothers. No, took one brother. And he goes, oh, I have another brother. So they took that brother. And then he goes, I've got another brother. So another family took him. And then they said, oh, we have two more. Another family took those two. Didn't really work out with them, so we ended up having them in our home at some point.
Gotcha.
And then the three went to other homes eventually.
Wow. So you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest.
Wow. So when they came into your house, like, what was that like?
I was in college.
Oh,
so
okay.
My sister is the one who actually, you know, had these strange faces looking at her. But I was there when my brother was adopted when I was 10 and he was 8. So we've always had a stranger at the table.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that, because you obviously have done so much, so many stories about adoption with
Wednesday's Child.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that older children are harder? Isn't that the case? Older children are harder to place into
right.
homes?
In fact, Wednesday's child is about the hardest to place.
Gotcha.
Older, large sibling groups, or special needs.
And that's because, why do you think overall that's the case?
A lot of people want an infant that they can, you know, teach and grow with together, with their own teachings, perhaps. I had one family though that adopted, and the father said, I don't want to change diapers. I want a little buddy. And he adopted an 8-year-old. Mm. So I love Wednesday's Child because it really is a voice for perhaps those who are unheard or forgotten. And we are, I think tonight's story is about an adoption at 20 years old. A 20-year-old get adopted.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know how many children have been featured have been adopted? Like, do you guys?
We left the number at 500. I say it's way bigger because that's an old number for one. And number two, you think of the spillover effect, like my family who took in other foster kids, or the boy who was adopted at 8, for example, his parents went on to adopt 2 more, but they weren't Wednesday's child.
Gotcha.
I have another family. They adopted another boy. I have all these boys that were adopted around 8 years old, and their family went on to adopt like 5 more from other
gotcha.
Scenarios.
When did you start doing that? Those
1995.
Segments. How did that start?
We didn't start it. I have to give credit to another station that was doing it. Their news director then became our news director. That reporter retired, and the county asked us to pick it up. So we didn't launch it. I just say we made it bigger and better.
I definitely made it bigger and better. I mean, just like, I know you said it's an old number, but 500 humans finding a place to live is
Let me just say
part.
This. Why I say bigger and better is we were never tracking the numbers. So people would say, whatever happened to so-and-so? Like, well, we don't know because we aren't tracking it. We didn't have any follow-up. So we had a sponsor that required follow-up. So the social workers then had to report back and say, here's the status of this case, this situation. We used to do a reunion at Knott's Berry Farm, which was really neat. Families would come and they'd bring their siblings and you'd see everybody, you know, and we did it year after year. So you'd be like, oh, they're so-and-so. Now they're 18.
Yeah.
That was neat. Now through social media, I have some of the kids reach out to me on Instagram.
Real, so they were featured on Wednesday's Child like, you know, years ago. And then
I had a girl reach out to me that might've been on like 17 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. She had a little clip. It was all grainy. And she sent me the clip of her.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Just like, hey, Christine, I don't know if you remember me, but.
Yep, she had a question for me. And then I had another guy reach out and say, hey, I was on with the Lakers with Wednesday's Child, and now I have a son. I want to show it to him. Do you have it? So you have little interesting things like that. It's one kid's birthday today. Sorry, happy birthday.
Oh, how do you remember that?
Well, I'm in touch with him.
Oh, okay.
He reached out also on Instagram.
Aww.
He started seeing my events and kind of said, hey, I want to come. I'm like, okay. So he started, he's the one who's the model. I don't know if you've seen the model.
Oh, okay. Well, I've seen you go to some photo shoots and like style people.
Yeah.
And kind of be the artistic director maybe.
I happened to be emceeing for a designer for his fashion show. And this kid was saying, hit me up. I want to go to something. So I said, well, come be my assistant, carry my stuff. And so he came and I realized he was tall.
Yeah.
And I said,
yeah.
Well, you could do this runway thing if you want to do it. And literally his first project, I took him to New York to walk New York Fashion Week.
Wow, he went to New York?
Mm-hmm. He's been 3 times.
Oh my gosh, you must have. So New York Fashion Week, that's huge.
He'd never walked a runway before.
Wow, and he walked in that?
Yeah. I said, just walk it. Just look straight ahead and walk it. So that was a lot of fun. He was totally hyper and excited and he, you know, hadn't traveled too much. So that was a neat thing. And now he's done New York Fashion Week several times. Phoenix Fashion Week, Palm Springs, Orange County. Several LA shows.
Wow. Did you, when you first started doing those stories, did you get nervous about like what to talk about with some of them? Or did you feel like, just because I'm thinking if I was in your shoes and doing that story, just coming from my background, I don't have a lot of experience with adoption. Like if I was going to talk to, you know, a 16-year-old who didn't have parents and didn't have a place to call home. Like, did you feel like ever nervous at all? Or like, you know, what am I going to figure out, like, how am I going to tell these stories?
Well, no. I'll tell you why. For some reason, I kind of became very kid-like when I would do these stories. And the social worker would tell me, you're so mean to us adults, but with the kids, I would be like in the sand with the toy truck.
Yeah.
So, no, I loved hanging with the kids. And you don't have to ask them too much about their plight and their scenario. It's pretty much you want to get to know them so we can, you know, let the world know that there's this interesting, neat person with hopes and dreams.
Oh, sure. Like, what do you... So you like to paint. What do you like to paint?
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Exactly.
Their hobbies or, like,
exactly.
Things they're passionate about.
Right. And so why, again, I say we made the program bigger and better is our social worker, Dr. William Wong, who is with DCFS, came up with the idea of dream days. So instead of just... Every week we were going to a pizza place to make pizza and to a park. And they were like, well, this is getting old. We decided to, come up with shoots that are tailored to their interest. So if you like to cook, we're going to call up a restaurant and go in their kitchen and learn how to cook with a chef. So you're inspired for your dream and your career choice, and you can actually see that you can actually do it.
Yeah.
So now you'll see every shoot is so different because it's tailored to the child's interests or needs.
That's right. Is there a particular one that you like? You just have like a great memory from like in recent times, or like, wow, this is really cool. I can't believe we got here. You know, like that, something that you guys got to do.
I do like one we aired last week. It's at a restaurant called the Culture Club.
Uh-huh.
And this girl, and she talked about it on camera, has diabetes, and she's also the cook at her group home. So we took her to this extreme healthy place where everything's organic and fresh and fermented teas. And so she made a vegan Cobb salad.
Oh,
she had never had a vegan Cobb salad. It's not a vegan restaurant, but that's what she made. And it was gorgeous. And they just, you know, brought her in the kitchen and showed her love. And she got to make this fantastic looking meal.
Yeah.
And then she ate. And just as an example of a new experience.
Yeah.
For her. And now she's the cook at the group home, and maybe she'll use tomatoes and cucumbers and lettuce, and she'll know that her health concerns are being validated and that there are steps she can take for her own health and her future. So I like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we do that too because we understand that not every child is going to find the match in an adoptive family, but it could be a day that they never forget.
Oh, exactly.
And that they know that they matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to hang with Christine Devine. I wonder if
that's
they recognize
not the perk.
You.
I think the vegan Cobb salad might have been the perk on that one.
How do you make a vegan Cobb salad, though? Because isn't Cobb salad hard-boiled egg?
Oh, there's a way.
There's a way.
There's
clearly.
A way.
She did it.
Lentils.
Yeah.
Avocado.
Yeah.
Tomatoes.
Gotcha.
Nuts.
Cool. Okay. Well, how do you feel being in this room, in the podcast room?
Well, I'm very excited to do a podcast, and I'll tell you why. You know, in news, the average news story is a minute 30. What? How long is your podcast can go? Half hour, an hour?
We've been talking for 47 minutes and 45 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to that. That's what I want to do. I want to just really expand on issues that you can't do in a regular newscast because the format doesn't allow for the time.
Totally.
And all the community events that I've been fortunate to get to be a part of, there's so many stories coming out of them.
Yeah.
So many stories. So I already have like 10 ideas. I reached out to the events I have coming up saying, I want your story. I want your story. And they can talk for an hour. I mean, I want to do one on suicide prevention with the National Suicide, the Suicide Prevention Center that just opened up in Century City.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it opened.
Yeah, well, are you watching Fox 11 News? We did cover that.
Oh, okay.
We covered that.
Oh, I did. You did a story about it. No, I did. I knew that. With,
right.
What's her name?
Well, her name is Keita Curry. Melissa Rivers was there. Ronda
Hirsch.
Rousey was
there. Is
there
a girl named...
Didi Hirsch.
Didi Hirsch.
Didi Hirsch Mental Health Services. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. I feel like these things... I feel like this is like oozing out of you. Like you could totally get a lot of people in here too.
A lot of people. It's a big city.
Yeah.
It's a big city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I think it's going to be good.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I could use an assistant to help book all these fantastic people in our great city.
We got to get Miss Kimberly Tran.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
Calling Kimberly Tran.
Yeah. I know.
The thing is, there are no shortage of stories in our city, and there's no shortage of people doing really amazing, powerful things. And, you know, the podcast is called Olympic and Bundy. I'm going to also say we're taking you out of Olympic and Bundy and bringing you people to Olympic and Bundy to tell their story. So
exactly,
there are a lot of ways to, you know, share what we have here and be a voice for others who are out there.
Totally. And I feel like just your Christine Divine, like that name is very synonymous with our company. Like, I feel like you are just like such a great representation of it. And Olympic and Bundy was like, that's where we are. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like it's perfect. I really do. Like, when I was talking with my boss, with Patrick, about like how it could continue, he was like throwing out your name. And I was like, literally, yes. As soon as he said it, I was like, I feel like she's just perfect.
Well, I mean, we have some neat people here at Fox 11. I mean, I love Hal's podcast with that cute, clever name, What the Hal.
Oh, yeah.
That's
very funny.
Yeah. And he's great. He brings a beautiful light to some great topics. So he's doing a great job as well.
Yeah.
I am a podcast addict. You know, one thing I think it keeps me from trying to text and drive, which is a no-no.
Oh, totally.
Is I get so engrossed in a podcast, it carries me all the way home. I'm not a books on tape person, but I'm a podcast person.
Do you listen to any like serialized podcasts? Like not necessarily conversations, but like, you know, ongoing stories,
like a novel or something?
Like, okay, so the big one is called Serial. That kind of like kickstarted that to where it was like a true crime.
Well, I don't like crime.
Podcast.
I don't like crime, so I'm not going to want to watch. I'm not going to want to listen to a crime podcast.
But there are. But
that's not going to uplift me on my way home.
Sure, of course. But I guess I mean like Serial is sort of like what serialized podcasts on the map.
Right.
But there's ones that beyond true crime,
sure,
like
correct.
You know, just various stories. I listened to a couple like that are just, you know, about various things. But then literally, it's amazing now because there's so many podcasts you can. Just search any keyword you're thinking of, and
exactly.
There's 500 podcasts
exactly.
about it.
And I love that, too. When Meghan Markle was getting married, I was subscribing to all the royal podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And all about the royals.
Yeah, I listened to one, actually, that comes out every week about the British royal family by two American writers in New York.
Oh,
and they're just obsessed with, specifically, like, Kate and William and uh-huh. Meghan and Harry. So they just talk about what they did that week.
How
and.
Funny.
It distracts you when you're in the car.
It really does.
In traffic, mm-hmm. you know?
It gets me from A to B without trying to, let me see if I can check a text.
Yeah. My husband gets mad because I'll listen to podcasts while I'm getting ready for work in the morning and he'll still be sleeping.
Oh,
and he's like, turn your podcast down.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. So anyhow, it's good. Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time to chat.
Thank you.
How do you feel about, do you think you're going to sit there?
I don't know. I can sit anywhere.
So where I'm sitting,
yeah.
I like sitting here because like if you have Oscar or Patrick sitting at the soundboard, I like sitting here and looking at the person.
I gotcha.
Because sometimes people can sit across from you, but then you kind of have the mic blocking your view.
Right. I gotcha.
Yeah,
give me whatever
feels
tips you
right.
have. So Oscar will be here in the podcast room?
Yes, Oscar or Patrick. Someone will be working the sound.
Oh, they are.
To make sure that it's good. Or, you know, they might set it up and step out.
Okay.
Depending on the situation that day. But I definitely like sitting, because I've done it before where I was sitting, you know, across the table from the person. And it was fine. But it helps me do better when I'm like sitting next to
them. Gotcha. Okay. So I have actually asked a few people to come in for my podcast. So seeing them across the way.
Oh, yeah. So, and then if you have, like, multiple people on, you know, you could be, like, across, like, next to you and then across from you. We've had Hal's had, like, 7 people on at one time, I think. A lot of people.
I'm trying not to do that.
Yeah. I know.
There's so many chairs in the room.
The more people you have talking, it probably is kind of confusing. But anyways, you know, whatever works for you, I guess. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be exciting because I think people are hitting me up all the time to tell their story. Now I'm like, I've got a platform.
Exactly.
I can tell your story, whether it makes Fox 11 News at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
I have a platform.
And the cool thing is that the longer that episodes live out there, the more they're listened to, you know? Like I've noticed that an episode will post, like it initially posted January 2018 and people are listening, like, 50 people listened to it yesterday. You know,
no kidding.
It's like, it's really interesting because the longer something lives out there,
right.
They're just searching for it.
Well, I have done, like you said, am I losing my voice? If I lose my voice for 10 o'clock news, then we're in real trouble.
I know, sorry.
That's okay. I think that you're right. People search for those keywords. And I've got some like let's say I do the Suicide Prevention Center. That could be a keyword and very helpful podcast to someone.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then someone will listen to it. And then I feel like word of mouth is very powerful too.
Okay.
You know, like if you say, oh, I loved Maria Shriver's episode with Kathy Lee, like mm-hmm. I value that and would listen to it. You know, like I feel like mm-hmm. word of mouth, like, oh, I listened to the best podcast, or these two girls that host this podcast are so funny. I love listening to it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I think word of mouth is kind of powerful and like recommending other podcasts. So I found that it is maybe helpful if people listening to this are like, oh, I really loved that episode that you did with so-and-so, and then right. share it with someone who they think might benefit from it, you know?
Well, I've actually shared some podcasts. Hey, listen to a great podcast on whatever. Totally. I don't know if anybody noticed it or picked it up, but
yeah.
Okay, well, so word of mouth.
There's so much, it's like, there's so much content. When I'm at home and potentially have time to watch something on Netflix, I sit there at a loss because I'm like, I know there's 500 things I could watch and there's too many options. I'm overwhelmed and I can't even think of what I wanted to watch.
Right.
Or listen to,
there's
you know?
There's a lot out there for sure.
There's so much yeah. that it's like, just tell me. I need some recommendations, please.
Well, I know for me, if I'm going home after work, which is 11 p.m. at night, I really want to be fed something spiritual and positive. I want to kind of cleanse the palate of the reality of the world and be uplifted. So for me, driving home, it's usually something that's inspirational, motivational, or maybe a TED Talk where you're learning something.
Yeah, TED Radio Hour.
Yes.
I
want to know
Roz.
About the. I want to close my day with good in the world.
Definitely. How I Built This is one of my favorite podcasts that NPR does, and it's with entrepreneurs, like kind of
How I Built This.
Yeah, people who actually really big companies, like the owner of Panera, the CEO of Starbucks.
I'm reading his book right now.
Really?
Howard Schultz, yeah.
Yeah, he did one, and it was really interesting. I would love to read his book, actually, after having listened to that podcast.
It's a quick, easy read. Yeah, I'm plowing through it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't he say that he was, like, teetering on the idea of running for president?
Yeah, he did, yes. CNN did a whole town hall with him.
Oh, that's right.
It's on my DVR. There's only so much time in the day.
I know, true. Okay, what time is it? Oh, it's 2:40.
Time to go.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, what time do you get ready for? What time do you normally come
Today's
in?
A special day. I'm on assignment today, so I need to go find an editor to edit my big piece that's going to air tonight.
Okay.
We're gearing up, obviously, as we talked earlier about the memorial service for Nipsey Hussle, so it's a full day today.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I wish you well. I know tomorrow will be probably a long day. But I'm glad that you're going. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be, I'm eager to watch.
Witness to history. A witness to history.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right. Well, thank you very much, Christine.
Thank you. And onward and upward to you as well.
Thank you very much. Godspeed. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. Be on the lookout for new episodes. Olympic and Bundy is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of those good places. And if you're enjoying it, leave a 5-star rating and review. It helps to get the podcast discovered by new listeners. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.